Last night, financial support for thousands of young adults in foster care expired. Congress approved the pandemic relief money earlier this year for young people about to age out of the foster care system. It helped them pay for food, housing, and transportation at a time of great economic uncertainty. Back in July, we spoke with young adults who just started living on their own without the safety net that many Americans have. This is Hillary. We agreed to use her first name to protect her privacy. She told us how much the money helped.
And I was able to use some of that emergency funding to like buy a bed and like dishes. And basically I had like nothing but a couple of suitcases and an apartment. So it ended up working out in the end, and it was like a long and very stressful process. But the years after foster care have been long and stressful, so I'm sort of used to that.
Foster care advocates like Sixto Cancel say the program was a lifeline that must be renewed for vulnerable young people.
The system failed them. We were supposed to either be reunited or adopted, and those two things didn't happen. And so I feel like this is our actual moment to tell America, in like a way that's in English, like this is the failure of aging out. This is what actually happens to us.
Cancel spent much of his own life in foster care, and now he leads a nonprofit dedicated to helping foster children called Think of Us. He wrote an essay recently in the New York Times arguing for complete reform, a rethinking of how kids are treated after they're separated from biological families. We spoke earlier this week. One way that you talk about reforming the system is by talking about your own experience. Tell me how you entered foster care.
Well, I entered foster care as a baby because my mother had drug addiction. But the first moment that I realized that the foster care system really needed improving was when I was 9 years old, I was adopted, and it was a pretty racist and abusive adoption. So by the time I was 13, I was couch surfing, having to figure out like where I was gonna live. But it took actually recording the abuse, taping a tape recorder to my chest to actually prove what was happening to me. And that's how I re-entered foster care at the age of 15.
And so for you, like many children in the foster care system, you spent years of your life moving from home to home, not really knowing where you would be permanently. What was that like?
Well, I think, the hardest part is that you're always wondering, like, what's going to happen to you? Are you going to be in a family that really loves you, really cares about you? And the worst part about being in some homes is that you get this notion that you're really cared for, that you're really loved, and then you find yourself in a trash bag going to the next place. So it really sets this, feeling of like, hey, do people actually really care? And then there's this big fear about, like, am I going to be placed in a group home? As a 15-year-old child at the time, I was petrified because of what I had seen with my brother in group homes, what I had heard from other young people in group homes.
In your essay, you say something that was really, frankly, heartbreaking. You say, I could have lived with people who loved me. And I think in that case, you were referring to kinship adoptions. And in my understanding is that in many cases, it's the law. If there's a family member or someone who is close to the biological family that's willing to take a child in, those people have priority. Did that happen in your case? I mean, was there any kind of kinship adoption ever explored for you?
No, unfortunately, it wasn't. I think, I don't know what the efforts were when I was a baby, but when I was 15 years old, like many teenagers that come into foster care, the conversation was about aging out, turning 18 or 21, and then going off to work or school. So people really didn't explore who were family members that I could have gone and lived with, who were family members that I could have been connected with. And so the goal was to basically go to a foster home or end up going to a group home. And what I knew about these group homes was that young people felt like they weren't safe. Just this past year, we did a study, and we talked to 78 young people across the country who had recently lived in institutions, and we collected their stories in our new report called Away From Home. And almost universally, we heard the real challenging experiences of living in these places that included sexual assault, being beaten by staff, feeling like they had to be in the survival mode against each other. And some youth blamed themselves for being in that group home. So because of this work, Think of Us is really calling for the end of group homes and foster care. And many states have already signed up with us to actually do this.
You mentioned that some kids, blame themselves. Of course, it's not their fault. But there is a narrative that develops, I think, sometimes in the foster care system that if a child gets older and hasn't been adopted yet, that they are somehow unadoptable, that nobody wants them. And that's, you know, these kids who unfortunately end up in these group homes. Is that part of the dynamic at play here that hurts these kids?
Absolutely. One of the findings that we've had in our report is that youth internalize the blame for why they end up in an institutional placement. They develop feelings of shame and feeling worthlessness. And I'll just, you know, one young person, I'll quote them. They said, like, in quotes, they said, "I was in that facility because I was deemed to be dangerous to myself or others. But yet I was the one being abused and locked in rooms. I still carry that feeling of blame with me today. What we do to children in the system now lives on with them tomorrow and in the years to come." And this young person was referring to some of the sexual abuse that that young person experienced while being in an actual group home.
Do you think that many of the 44,000 kids in the United States that live in a group setting, by your calculation, do you think that many of those kids have like a kinship option that was never explored like you did?
Absolutely. Almost all the young people that we talked to said that they actually had a person that they would have want to live with, and we could have explored that specific option. But unfortunately, the system did not explore those options. And that was my story. If at 15, someone would have said, "Hey, Sixto, who is the family members you want to be connected to?" I would have been able to lift up my sister. And my sister then, who was connected to her, our aunt, who I had never met until literally about 3 years ago, would have then revealed that she was a foster parent who was 58 miles away. I will never forget walking into this family reunion for the first time, which is like every single foster kid's dream, right? I walk into the park, I see people who look like me, which is weird for me because I've grown up in foster care all my life. And then as I'm like taking this moment in, I start to see like little children running around, a Mexican sibling set, and everybody's like, "Oh, that's our cousin." And I was so confused because although I'm Puerto Rican and we come in all types of shades of skin pigment, I was like, these people look 100% Mexican. And then I find out that they're actually an adopted sibling set. And in that very moment, I felt like for the first time, I was like, wow, I really missed out on something big. And what I missed out on was actual family who was always 58 miles away, who could have taken me in.
That could have been you. Right. How would that have changed your life?
You know, every 2 years, you know, I found myself in a new place, in a new place, in a new place. And when I was 16, I kind of just gave up on the hope of family. And I really was just like, look, I have to prepare for aging out and I have to prepare to make a life of my own. And so there comes this day where you kind of just accept that, you know, these Christmas movies, this kind of family portrait, like that's not going to happen for you. I am where I'm at today in spite of. But there are so many people who get to contribute to being a great citizen in America because they were loved, cared for, and that they had families and mentors who got them to that place. And unfortunately, like, that's not all of our stories.
So this is the life story that has gotten to you where you are now, which is an advocate to reform the foster care system. You say that group homes should no longer be used, and also importantly that children should not be placed in foster care just because their birth families are poor. How would those things help fix the system?
We need to actually support kinship relatives with the same type of supports that we give the stranger, a foster parent. We provide a foster parent with the health insurance for a child. We provide a foster parents with a social worker. We provide foster parents with services that coach young people. And we also provide foster parents with the actual reimbursement, a monthly check to support the needs of that young person. And so if we provide these relative and broadly speaking kin, like family members, friends of the family members who would also step up in these situations, then if we provide those supports, we're going to keep young people in their families and in their communities.
Sixto Cancel is founder of Think of Us. It is a nonprofit for foster care reform. Sixto, thank you so much for speaking with us and sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Thank you all so much.